another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. I am your host, Jack, and today here are my guests.
I'm Allie.
I'm Melissa.
So today we are going to discuss the three actors who have played Peter Parker in a blockbuster feature-length adaptation of the Spider-Man comics. I should make clear, though, that other actors have played Peter Parker in, like, animated films, mm-hmm. TV shows, and on stage. Never forget Turn Off the Dark.
It will
live on in its legacy. So we're just covering, like, the three that have played him in, like, the most biggest mm-hmm. films.
The Spider-Man that your mom probably knows.
Yeah, like, any older parent would, if you would ask them who plays Spider-Man, they would name one of these three people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's how we kind of went on that. I've personally experienced many a Toby versus Andrew discourse in the past, but after Tom's been thrown into the mix, I feel like that hasn't really happened as much, so I wanted to bring this up mm-hmm. specifically to talk about all three now that we have a third Peter. And for this, we're not necessarily evaluating the films themselves. We're talking about the actor's performance or their personal take on the portrayal of the same character. But we will discuss the films in general mm-hmm. because, like, they do impact the actor himself. And, you know, the screenwriters do kind of dictate a lot of it as well. So, yeah, we're going to just get the ball rolling and talk about good old Tobey Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
He first played Peter Parker in the 2002 Spider-Man film. It ended up being a trilogy. There was Spider-Man 2 in 2004, and then Spider-Man 3 in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I'm glad you did this research.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even have to write it down either. Oh, I'm just, like, reciting it from memory.
Oh, way to go.
It was a big part of my childhood. I loved the Spider-Man movies growing up. I got really excited whenever a new one was coming out. And I can't even count how many times I watched the first two. But yeah, so in terms of Tobey Maguire's performance, I feel like he captured the awkwardness and the inner turmoil of Peter Parker very mm-hmm. well without making it too angsty, at least in the first two movies.
Yeah.
The third movie performance is very interesting, but I don't necessarily think it's as much his fault as, like, the third film being very ambitious, but not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about the third movie. Like, I think the studio was like, put Venom in there. And Sam Raimi's like, I don't care about Venom, but fine. I'll shove him in there, too, if you want him there. And it just mm-hmm. became very muddled. But I think there are individual parts of the third movie that are definitely worthwhile. I think it's still worth watching. I hope it's not something people in the future completely skip over and call it quits after two.
Yeah, and there's definitely some good CGI in there. Like, I would say the CGI holds up a lot more than I expected it to, especially mm-hmm. with the Sandman sequence.
Yeah, I didn't rewatch three. I just rewatched two because that was the one my brother owned and could lend me.
Yeah,
I remember the Sandman effects being very compelling to me when I saw it in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still good things happening, and I think if someone was shown just a few clips of Spider-Man 3, they would think, oh yeah, this seems like a great movie, but it's just like the parts are better than the sum.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. What did y'all think of Tobey Maguire, a.k.a. Obey Maguire?
Yes.
I think Tobey Maguire is a good actor.
Yeah.
I think he's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with that mm-hmm. Spider-Man trilogy, and I like the cast of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those movies, like, so much. James Franco's the first, you know, I think that's the first time I'd ever seen James Franco, because I wasn't Freaks and Geeks. I wasn't on that train before.
Mm-hmm.
But, I love those movies.
Yeah, they're very sweet. J. Jonah Jameson is a legend.
I think
that's, like, one of the pinnacle performances by anybody in any kind of movie ever. Like, we should, like, wrap it up in a gold disc and, like, launch it into space for, like, aliens to see. What is humanity? it is J.K. Simmons playing J. Jonah Jameson. This is the best that we have to offer. And like I said, I just rewatched 2, and I was struck by how 2 felt like an operatic tragedy and such a cartoon at the same time. Like, Peter Parker is, like, comedically downtrodden. Everybody bumps into him. He drops everything. And he also has these speeches like, why don't I get to have what I want? When do I have what I need?
Yeah.
It's like Death of a Salesman and The Tick at the same time somehow.
Yeah, and the craziest thing is that it works really well. It doesn't seem, like, off-putting by any means.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man 2 is still one of, like, the best superhero movies ever made. Because it is all about that inner turmoil of, like, the man versus the mask.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And the CGI in that one holds up really well, too.
Yeah, it does.
I think, like, we've had this discussion before with, besides the use of a payphone, it still works really well.
It does. It did feel timeless to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very timeless, and I love that. Definitely a film worth putting in a capsule or the canon. Or
yeah.
However one would call it. Also, I feel like I should point out that this was like 4 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
One day, we spent the entire day doing this. We watched, Melissa and I watched the original Spider-Man trilogy in reverse chronological order. So we started with 3 and ended with 1.
Yes. That was a good time. And this was, I think,
like a great day.
Yeah. It's fun. A great way to spend like 8 hours if you have them.
This sounds great.
Yeah. It was like a January day when it was really snowy outside and like school hadn't started back for me yet and you were off work or something along
Even
those lines.
Better.
And it was a good time.
Yeah.
And that's how we came up with Obey Maguire, because of the opening credits, it cuts off the T in Toby's name at some point during, like, that little
some graphic flashes over it, and for a second it just says Obey Maguire.
Oh, yeah.
So the first thing I have written down in my notes about Obey Maguire is wide-eyed, glassy stare. I also have, if milk could shrug, which is what he feels like to me. He is, out of the three of them, the best at playing, like, the dweeby Peter Parker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Like, he's the Peter Parker that remains the most Peter even while he is still Spider-Man. At least up until the point in movie 3 where he, like, dyes his hair black and, like, struts down the street.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I should point out, too, another thing. Back when there was the whole Obey versus Andrew thing, there was a Tumblr post that said, Bay is the one you love, the one you return to, the one you can count on, while Daddy is just someone who's really hot, and you were saying that Obey Maguire was Bay and Andrew Garfield was Daddy?
Yes! Yes, and not to, like, get too ahead of ourselves, but I think Andrew Garfield is by far the best romantic lead out of the three of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and he and Emma Stone dated, so
oh,
they
of
have
course
all
they
that,
did.
That chemistry, you know.
Yeah.
Of course they did.
Like, I didn't know that, but watching it, like, I felt that it was true.
Yeah. Yeah. They dated for, like, years.
Wow.
So there's definitely, it's real.
I could feel it. I could feel it coming off that screen. Yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess moving into Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
He played Spider-Man for 2 films, although I know that he wanted to play Spider-Man for many more.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me sad to think what could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, he first played Spider-Man in the 2012 reboot, The Amazing Spider-Man, and then played him again in the 2014 sequel. I think with his portrayal, I think he's a very talented actor, and obviously other people agree because he has, like, an Oscar nomination at this point and multiple Golden Globe nominations. So, like, people praise him. People understand that he is very talented. And I don't necessarily think that his portrayal of Peter Parker is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way that the character is written for this franchise feels very different. And I think he's too attractive to play Peter Parker.
You don't believe that he's bullied at school.
No, like, Peter should not be more handsome than Harry.
Yeah.
And not to say anything bad about Dane DeHaan, but I think he is in The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, the way that he dresses and the way he carries himself seems more like a hipster than an outcast. And
yeah.
So it would be very hard to think that he didn't have friends or that people didn't like him besides just Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a moody artist.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like somebody that would be made fun of. He seems like the guy who is doing the making fun of. Not that he comes off as, like, an aggressive jerk, but just that this is a very snarky Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And I know that was an element in the comics that he was kind of wisecracking, but this did feel like, very snarky. Like, not quite that he has a chip on his shoulder, but that he's kind of clever and, like, kind of smug a little bit.
Yeah.
He's not boyish.
He is not. Know? Yes, that's very good. That's a good observation.
Yeah. And I think Tobey Maguire and Tom Holland both are boyish.
Yes.
And he's not boyish.
Yeah.
That's a very good observation. I also put literally the word wisecracking for Andrew.
Yeah.
Because I think he did bring that element to Spider-Man that we hadn't seen before, and it was fun at times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the scenes where he is wisecracking is very entertaining. But it's almost too stark of a contrast between Peter Parker and Spider-Man that he would be that much of a wisecracker.
Yeah.
Like, because when you see a film like Deadpool, Wade Wilson is Deadpool.
Yeah.
Even when he's not Deadpool, he's still making the same jokes and still has that snarky attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just seems like a huge contrast. And that's, like, no fault of Andrew's,
because
those were just the lines he was given. He's just delivering them. But, yeah, it's interesting. It's just a very different tone. And I think they wanted to make it different enough from the first trilogy to not just make it seem like a pointless reboot, but the changes they made weren't necessarily probably the wisest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe why it just didn't connect with audiences.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
The directing is a little strange.
Yeah, it's a little flashy, but I think one thing I did really admire about The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I didn't rewatch the first one. I figured because I had access to Spider-Man 2, I'm like, I'll keep this consistent across the board, and I'll watch The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then I'll just watch Homecoming, because after Civil War, that's Tom Holland's second appearance, so I'll, like, have them all on even footing that way.
Mm-hmm.
In preparing for this, I watched Spider-Man Homecoming, and then I watched The Amazing Spider-Man, and it was just going from one that is so good to one that's not as good, and I was like, this is, you know, Homecoming is so good.
Yes.
Like, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I love it.
Yeah, that ended up being the movie that I took the least amount of notes on, just because it's so engaging and, like, so competent at everything it's doing.
You know, I think another thing about The Amazing Spider-Man is that, like, you go through him getting bitten again and then his great uncle dying again, and you don't need to go through that again. It kind of seems like you're watching the same movie again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's why Homecoming works, too, because it's like, you've seen this enough times.
Yeah.
We don't need to, like, walk you through the same thing again. But
it's...
Yeah.
Something about Homecoming is that it is aspirational. Like, we are not meeting a Peter that has just gone through a loss and is almost, like, trying to get back to where he was before.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Peter that is, like, pretty steady in his life, and he's trying to be something greater.
Yeah.
So that gives the whole movie, like, this lighter tone to it, that it doesn't have this, like, grief hanging over it, which I don't think is, like, a flaw of the other two franchises. Like, I kind of like the operatic, like, theatrical tragedy of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man and the, one thing I wrote down in my notes about The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is how prevalent Uncle Ben is. As well as Peter's two actual parents who haven't gotten brought up in the other two franchises. Like, I think they do kind of edge on overdoing it and making it this big conspiracy, maybe larger than it needs to be. But I like that he's still thinking about his parents as his parents, and he's thinking about his uncle. And then after Gwen Stacy dies, he's going to keep thinking about Gwen Stacy. And I would have liked to have seen a third installment where he's got these, like, four guardian angels, like, in his head, like, these touchstones, these people that he returns to, and these people he, like, mentally turns into for help.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that the grief aspect works in other franchises, but I think having it outside of Homecoming also works very well for Homecoming and what it wanted to do, and it's very refreshing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something else I thought about, too, how Amazing Spider-Man, at least the first one, kind of hits the same story beats that Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi one, does, the first one. When I was watching The Amazing Spider-Man with a group of friends, Sean, who both of you know and has been a guest on this podcast before, as soon as they showed Uncle Ben, he's like, oh, great, we gotta watch Uncle Ben die again. Like, it just, it's very predictable.
Yeah. I think Homecoming was good at showing you a lot of things that felt familiar, especially in having that kind of, like, John Hughes high school movie aesthetic. It felt familiar, and it never felt, like, exhausting. Like, oh, I've seen this too many times already.
Yeah. They changed a lot, and I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... I, like, also love just... He's got so much energy. It is so light. Like, the first couple scenes, he's, like, recording everything about his internship, and he's talking so fast. He's so excited. Like, it's super light. Lighthearted.
Yeah, I love that Tom Holland's Spider-Man is the Spider-Man that is most excited to be Spider-Man. Yeah. He's not just like, oh, this is cool, and oh, it's my turn to be a good guy, just like Uncle Ben said. He's like, oh, this is fun. This is what I want to do after school every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we will talk about Tom Holland now. I have in my notes, my precious son has never done anything wrong in his life. Yeah, with his introduction, it was very interesting.
Are you going to go through the dates?
Yes. Because, like, his introduction, I think, also shows how different this Spider-Man series is.
Yes.
Because he's first introduced as a minor character in Captain America Civil War in 2016, and then Spider-Man Homecoming follows in 2017. And although this episode will be released in early May, at this point, Avengers Infinity War has not been released yet, but it's coming.
Yes.
His third film is coming up soon. But yeah, I think he portrays the wide-eyed innocence and excitement incredibly well. And I think he's the most believable in terms of the difference between Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Yes.
Like, he plays both of them very well, and he tries to wisecrack as Spider-Man, but sometimes it fails. Like, it's very realistic
that
he's, like, trying this out, but it's not quite there. And I think it just... he has such a good understanding of the character, and that might also just be that the screenwriters have a good understanding of the character, too, but, like, you can tell he's, like, really... he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
And another thing, another conclusion I came to watching these three guys together is I think Tom Holland is the smartest of all three Peters.
Yeah.
I think he has the best, like, problem-solving and, like, think-on-his-feet skills out of all of them.
Totally.
Yeah. Especially for someone who's supposedly very smart. There's a lot of times when Peter Parker doesn't think things through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think he has an advantage age-wise.
Yeah.
Because both Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were 27 when they were cast as Peter Parker, and Tom Holland was 19 when he was cast as Peter Parker. So he still very much looks like a kid, has kind of a boyish voice, you know, has that physicality down there.
He also felt the most New York to me, guessing as a St. Louisian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I kind of got more of a New York feel from the mm-hmm. movie. Like, more so sort of, like, I think maybe because of his aunt. She yeah. seems like a New Yorker.
Yes.
Like, totally.
Yes.
And that, like, whole setup with their apartment and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Super New York.
And if I could have a minor sidebar, I am an aunt, so, like, I have a nephew. I have a brother that's much older than I am, and he had a son when he was pretty young. So my nephew was born when I was 8 years old, oh. and he's my best friend. And so, like...
So fun.
Yeah, and so, like, the Peter and May dynamic has always been very important to me, and so I paid a lot of attention to that. And I love how, like, the Tom Holland Marissa Tomei pair are, like, mm-hmm, they are yeah. best friends. Like, you see her, like, helping him get ready for the homecoming dance, and she, like, drives him around places. Like, they're good buddies. He is not in any way, like, embarrassed or anything. Like, and he's young enough that he's like, oh, I can't tell Aunt May I'm Spider-Man. What if she doesn't let me be Spider-Man anymore? And I also loved in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 how Sally Field Aunt May is so defensive and so protective. Like, I was the one who raised you. Like, forget about your parents. Like, you are my boy. And he looks at her and he's like, you're right. You are my everything. You are enough. You have always been enough. I love you so much. And, like, that never gets to be, like, that's a romantic speech in any other context. Like, no family member gets to look at another family member and say, you are enough. You are my everything. I love you so much. And so that moment between the two of them was so emotional. Affecting. Yeah. I think that's one of the highlights of that movie, or that, like, whole franchise, is that part yeah. where she's like, you are my life, and he's like, you are my life too, don't worry.
I would agree with that, and mm-hmm. that actually makes me think of a podcast I listened to when The Amazing Spider-Man 2 first came out, and the critics in it were saying, like, the scenes between Peter Parker and Aunt May, that is, like, two thespians
yes.
doing their best work.
It is.
In a scene study. Like, they are really good together. Like, those are really standout scenes mm-hmm. in, like, a movie that they didn't necessarily feel the same about overall.
Yeah.
But, like, those scenes are just so strong because mm-hmm. you have these really strong actors connecting with one another. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Sally Field's forever.
Yes.
She rules.
She's so good in those movies.
She is. Do you have any notes on Rosemary Harris as Aunt May?
She's also wonderful. I think she's very sweet, and I love how she is, like, that classic sweet, like, old woman with her handbag and her umbrella, but she also has this, like, iron spine within her. Like, she is going to take care of her own problems. Peter, don't worry. Take the $20. Do not leave the $20 here. It's yours. I can give you anything. I'm going to give you these $20. Yeah, they're very sweet together, but I think there's a lot of things the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man does well. If basing them entirely on the nephew-aunt relationships, I'd actually put it third, I think. I'd probably put Tom and Marissa number one, yeah. then Andrew and Sally, then Toby and Rosemary.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. And I think, too, because the first Spider-Man trilogy was just trying to hit all of
yeah.
the biggest marks, it's kind of nice that we get to see so many interpretations because mm-hmm. then they kind of explore different things that they didn't do as much the first time around
yeah.
or the second time around. And yeah, so it's interesting. It's kind of like comic books
yeah.
where, you know, the same character appears in so many different series over years and they have different artists
mm-hmm.
and different interpretations. And yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I like it. What a time to be alive.
It is. And I think, like, we might not have even seen the best Spider-Man yet. The best Spider-Man
yeah.
might come out when we are, like, in our 50s.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole future ahead of us, and it is very exciting.
Yeah. Definitely. Wow. That's crazy to think about. Yeah. So, I guess when it comes to ranking, we're all going to go around and talk about number 3 first of all. But, you know, keep in mind this isn't saying that any of them are bad by
mm-hmm.
any means. It's just, like, least favorite to favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will start with number three being Happy Andrew.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew. I love ya. You're great. You did your part. You did well. But I just think, like, it's the weakest film series.
Yeah.
And probably the least well-written.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely affects the, like, the material he's given. And I think just the way that the character was imagined for that series didn't mesh well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the same thing happened for, like, Emma Stone in the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave each Peter, like, some individual superlatives. So Andrew gets the Wisecracker Award, the Family Man Award, because I do like the angle of that movie where he's so interested in what happened to his parents, the Best Romantic Lead. And I also really liked in his performance that some of his acrobatics trickled over into when he's just Peter. Like, yeah. Actual Peter, like, moves very fluidly and very dynamically, and I liked that part of it. I think he does have a lot of good qualities to him, but yeah, he's got this sort of snarky edge to him, and he's not as, like, wide-eyed and, like, golly. And I think a good Spider-Man needs some element of golly. So yeah, he came in third for me as well.
I just remembered when he heel clicked.
Yes!
In The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and for weeks I tried learning how to heel click.
That is an iconic moment.
Yeah. And I tried showing it to you in my basement, and I just couldn't get off the ground.
I think all of us did it for, like, 5 minutes.
Yes, we all tried heel clicking, and it just... I wish there could have been, a recording of it mm-hmm. or something. It was a good time.
He's got such long legs.
Yes.
He's got an advantage for him.
He does. He does.
You know, I also think he can probably grow a beard, and the other two Spider-Men probably can't.
Yeah.
Don't have facial hair.
I think
that makes a difference.
I think he might be the Spider-Man I would be most interested to see as an adult. Like, what is a 45-year-old Peter Parker like? I might be interested in the 45-year-old Andrew more than the other 45-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting observation.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And he's got, like, really good hair. So he'll probably have good hair when he's older Spider-Man,
even
too,
if he's
which will give that effect of a superhero.
Yeah, he's pulling the mask on and off all the time, but his hair does always look perfect.
It does. Oh, yeah. Peter with the good hair. So number two, I put Tobey Obey Maguire. Because
mm-hmm.
I think this is probably the role that Tobey Maguire is going to be remembered for the rest of his life. And it has stuck around for many years mm-hmm. already, even though I guess, like, in the span of time, it hasn't been that many years. But, like, after having three Spider-Men, it feels like many years. But, yeah, I think he captures Peter Parker well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think had someone else played the role, maybe the film would have been completely different overall, and maybe there's, like, an alternate timeline where Spider-Man never continued to exist if someone else was cast as Peter Parker and wasn't as likable or relatable. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But, like, some weird mirror universe where Topher Grace is Peter and, like, Tobey Maguire is Eddie Brock.
I think I'd say Tobey Maguire also. His age was a disadvantage, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he did such a good job, and that's why, you know, anybody's mom, like, is gonna name him first as who played Spider-Man. They'll name him first.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because he did such a good job. But, yeah, if he weren't 27 when he was cast, maybe, though. Yeah. A little too old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would also rank Toby as second. His superlatives in the senior yearbook are most tragic, most transformed. Like, I think the biggest difference from, like, beginning of the movie to end of the movie, like, Peter to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I think he goes on a great journey. I think he is the greatest everyman out of the three Spider-Men, and he is the most lawful good. Like, he holds to that with great power comes great responsibility so strongly. he's admirable in a lot of ways, but I think there are also times where you're laughing at Peter more than you're laughing with Peter. Like, his variant of Peter is, like, so downtrodden in a way that is, like, sometimes very emotionally affecting and other times, like, kind of weird and goofy.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, definitely an admirable job, a job for the ages, though.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Well, I think this is going to be the first... One, the first podcast I've recorded that we've all been on the same page with all of these portrayals. It's interesting. So, yeah, that leaves Tom Holland as number one.
Yeah!
The goodest boy. He's just so precious. I love his portrayal so much. And I think he just continues to grow into the role.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will say... I thought he was still good in Captain America Civil War,
yeah.
But you can tell that he literally was cast the weekend before and didn't have any time to, like, really get into the role. And he's done so much development and character work since that to Spider-Man Homecoming, and I think he will continue to do that. And I just can't wait to see what else is in store for him. I love him. I'm gonna start crying.
Yeah.
He's so adorable.
He is. He's so great. I'm excited to see what's in store, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he definitely has the most power over people, over audiences, because he is, like, so young and so wide-eyed and enthusiastic and glad to be there. He's the one that reminds me the most of my own nephew, like, not just because of, like, the age difference. Like, in Homecoming, I think he's supposed to be 15, and, like, my nephew is about to turn 19, but... Yeah, his superlatives are the most enthusiasm, the best attitude. I think he takes becoming Spider-Man very well. Like, it doesn't give him a lot of angst, and it doesn't give him a big ego either. Like, he stays fairly even-keeled, which is admirable, and I think he's the smartest one, and I think he's, like, the best friend to anybody. Like, he's the best friend to May. He's the best friend to Ned. Of course, we don't... Like, this is a brand new original character. I mean, he might be in the comics, but this is the first time we're seeing him on screen. Like, he's a good friend to Ned. He's a good peer to his classmates. I think we get a lot of stuff with him that is kind of tricky to judge against the other Spider-Man, because they are, by the nature of just what licenses the company had, they are loners. And this Spider-Man is a team player, like, around the rest of the Avengers. So it is, like, not exactly an even playing field to compare them on. But I love that he is, like, just so interested in other people and, like, so eager to impress, like, who he considers his peers in superhero-dom. Yeah, he's not concerned about being the cool kid at school, but he does want Iron Man to like him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Iron Man is so good.
Yes!
I just love the setup of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie so much. I'm so great.
It is so joyous and so warm and... like, high stakes without being stressful. Like, it's exciting. It's not... Yeah, it's not a tense movie. It's just exciting.
And I think that Spider-Man has more grit. Like, he keeps coming back for the fights more. And he's in it. He's like, I'm gonna take on these bad guys more so, I kind of feel. We're enthusiastic.
Yeah, he's got a lot of times where, like, he could pull himself out and, like, nobody would blame him, but, like, he would blame himself. Mm-hmm. Like, he keeps going back for himself, proving this thing to himself that he can do it.
Yeah, which adds to the realism of him being young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Well, this has been fun.
Can I offer one final observation?
Of course.
In The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where he's figuring out, like, what happened to his parents, and he figures out the entire conspiracy, and he's building a conspiracy wall, there is a moment where he takes out a framed photograph of him and his parents when he was a kid, and he tapes the frame to the wall, which is insane. And I know the joke everybody remembers from that movie is when, like, he finds there's some weird keyword in his parents' notes, Roosevelt, and he just Googles, what is Roosevelt? question mark, question mark. And that's what everybody makes fun of. And nobody remembers him taping a frame to the wall.
Oh, yeah. That makes me feel like I need to watch that movie.
It's got a lot. There's a lot in there. It's a jam-packed motion picture experience.
Gosh,
it is. And I think I started to say this earlier and I didn't finish, but I think the Amazing Spider-Man franchise had the most exciting web-slinging visuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's zipping around the city, I think that is the best city zipping out of the three franchises.
Totally. I'm freaking out as I'm watching it. Like, he you know, he like does that handstand and then gets on his finger and then just falls off the building. Ooh. I'm like,
Like, that's the one that is the most like a theme park experience.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. That's so true. Mm-hmm. It's something, something
yes,
mm-hmm. kind of similar to the frame thing. In The Amazing Spider-Man, there's where that car is hanging, mm-hmm. and that little kid is in it, and he's like, crawl up, I'll save you. And the car starts burning, and the kid's like, no. He's like, come on, come on. The kid's like,
no. The kid's still learning, I guess.
I know, but he's like, I'm going to chill in this burning car.
Maybe if there would have been a third movie, that kid would have come back and been like, Spider-Man, I didn't trust you when I was younger, and now I see you are a hero. You can pull me out of a burning car any day.
I just slapping so hard.
That also makes me think of in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2, when the building's on fire.
Yeah.
And he saves that little girl, but he's like about to fall off of a ledge and she picks him up.
Yeah, she like helps tug his arm and like pull him back up onto the floor with her. It's very sweet. I love whenever we see just a normal like New York citizen trying to help Spider-Man. I wish there was more of that actually, because it's something that always gets me. Like, This movie is telling us, the audience, he has such a hard life, and I just want another person around him to also see that. Be like, Spider-Man, buddy, like, sit down. Sit down on this bench with me. Like, I'll buy you a hot dog. We'll just talk for a minute. You need to relax.
I think that is one thing that Spider-Man 2 does really well, like in the subway sequence, when all of those people are like, if you want him, you're going to have to go through me.
Yes.
And they're like holding him up as they pass him down.
Yeah.
And they're like, he's just a kid and all that stuff, which I'm like, I wouldn't think that was someone,
but I think the person who said he's just a kid was like a 50-year-old man. So I guess anybody below like 35, below like presidential age is like, well, you're a baby.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like when the people show some appreciation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man deserves it more than any other superhero.
He's the best.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So much love. You know, if 20th Century Fox does eventually join forces with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and they don't just wipe everything clean, it would be fun to do a comparison of Peter Parker, Peter Quill, and the Peter Quicksilver from the X-Men franchise that has unfortunately been a little bit whitewashed because his name's Pietro, but you know.
I think like Avengers Quicksilver is Pietro, and I guess because it's not set in Russia, like X-Men Quicksilver is just plain Peter. I guess then we'd have like four, like it'd be a comparison of like 3.5 people.
Yeah. That would be an interesting one. This has been another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. If you have any ideas for future episodes, send us an email at trifectapodcast@gmail.com. And remember, that is a Y instead of an I in Trifecta.